And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, it is Sunday night, Lisa Wolf. This is the WGN Radio Theater. It's program 60. It's March 13th, and you're looking very bubbly.
Thank you. I'm feeling bubbly. We got a full house here.
We do, and this is where we play classic radio shows for you all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m., so we're here 6 hours on this legendary Radio 720 WGN station. We play six classic radio shows every weekend. And thanks for joining us. I hope you'll stick around. We have a fun show planned. We're going to start things off in a few minutes with a good sci-fi adventure of Dimension X, which is written by Ray Bradbury, The Martian Chronicles. Then it's the Eddie Cantor Show with special guest Humphrey Bogart. He didn't do a lot of radio appearances, Lisa, so this is a rare show. And then The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective with Howard Duff as Sam Spade. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy A Myers Christmas, which centers on an estranged family who was brought together for Christmas.
All right, so you will win.
You will win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Home of the Best Pizza in Chicago.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This celebrity Lisa's talking about was in this movie, Lethal Weapon 2. His co-star is Mel Gibson, and he's sitting on a toilet bomb. Take a listen.
Gonna die on the toilet, aren't I?
Guys like you don't die on toilets. Anyway, I'm here, and I'm not planning on going just now.
Okay. Let's do it.
Let's do it, Lisa.
Let's do it, Carl.
All right, call us, 312-981-7200. Name that celebrity. Win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I'm going to die on the toilet, aren't I?
Guys like you don't die on toilets. Anyway, I'm here, and I'm not planning on going just now.
Okay. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's talk to Dave from Indiana. Hey, Dave. Are you with us? Hey, Dave.
Oh.
Well, I see him, but I don't hear
him. But, yeah.
We just want to know if Dave gives the right answer.
Yeah, hang on for a second.
Okay.
He's there. Let me just grab him real quick. You guys can talk about the prize while I'm doing that.
Yeah, Dave, if he gives us the right answer, is going to win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, which is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. We hope that Dave has a pizza on
Dave's
us.
Dave's there now. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, what's the answer, buddy?
Hey.
Danny Glover.
You are right, Dave. I'm so glad you called in and played Celebrity Scoop with us. We appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy that $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's.
Thank you. I love the show. Love the show.
Thank you. We appreciate you listening in.
I appreciate it, Dave. Thanks a lot.
I just said that, Carl.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate him, too.
Okay.
You know.
We both appreciate you, Dave.
All right. We're going to tune in to this sci-fi adventure of Dimension X. When we come back, we're going to have some coffee from Calibre Coffee in Barrington, South Barrington. And we have the owner and the manager going to talk about all of the wonderful coffees that you can get at Calibre. But first, we're going to tune into some sci-fi adventure. I'm going to have some coffee while we're listening to this.
Yes, I'm excited.
We're
going to learn a few things, too.
And they have a special for all our listeners. We'll tell you about that, too. All right, Lisa?
You can't get it all out. You're so excited.
Well, I need some coffee. All right, here we go. Let's tune into a science fiction adventure from August 18th, 1950. Lisa's got me all verklempt. Right? This is called The Martian Chronicles. It stars Norman Rose as our host, part one of Dimension X.
Dimension X. On stage tonight, Dimension X.
Tonight, Dimension X presents The Martian Chronicles, a dramatization of the new novel by one of our most brilliant young science fiction writers, Ray Bradbury. The Martian Chronicles. January in the year 1999. 1 minute it was Ohio winter with doors closed, the panes blind with frost, icicles fringing every roof, children skiing on snowy slopes. And then a long wave of warmth crossed the small town, a flooding sea of hot air.
Bye, Mom, I'm going out.
William McClellan, you come back here. You know you can't go out in winter without a coat. Do you want to catch your death of cold?
But it isn't cold, it's warm outside. It's rocket summer.
Rocket summer?
You know, like Indian summer.
The rocket lay on the launching field, blowing out pink clouds of fire and heat, cracking the icicles, melting the snow, making summer with every breath of its mighty exhausts. It seared the faces of the watching crowd and drove them back. And then they saw the red fire and heard the big sound as the silver rocket shot up toward Mars and left them behind on an ordinary Monday morning on the ordinary planet Earth. They lived in a house of crystal pillars on the planet Mars by the edge of an empty sea. And every morning you could see Ella eating the golden fruits that grew from the crystal walls, or her husband sitting alone in his room reading from a singing metal book over which he brushed his hand as one might play a harp. Ella and her husband were not old. Once they had liked painting pictures with chemical fire, swimming in the canals when the wine trees filled them with green liquors, and talking into the dawn together. But no more. Marriage sometimes makes people old and familiar while still young. And Ella was not happy now. This morning she sat dreaming between the crystal pillars and wished that somehow a miracle might happen. And then suddenly...
Ella! Did you fall?
No.
I thought I heard you cry out.
Did I? I was almost asleep and had a dream.
In the daytime? You don't often do that.
Strange. How very strange. I dreamed about a man. A tall man. 6 feet tall.
Oh, absurd. He'd be a giant, a misshapen giant.
I know. And yet, somehow he looked quite handsome. He was dressed in a strange uniform. And he came down out of the sky in a long silver craft.
Out of the sky? What nonsense.
He spoke pleasantly to me in another language. But somehow I understood him with my mind. Telepathy, I suppose.
A really ill.
And he said, I've come from the third planet in my ship. My name is Nathaniel York.
Stupid name. Whoever heard of a name like that?
Perhaps they have names like that on Earth.
That's ridiculous, Ella. Everyone knows the third planet is incapable of supporting life. There's too much oxygen in their atmosphere.
I suppose. But haven't you ever wondered if... Well, wouldn't it be fascinating if there were people there and they traveled through space in some sort of ship?
Really, Ella? You know I hate this emotional wailing. Now let's get on with our work.
Evening came. The twin white moons of Mars were rising, and the house closed itself in like a giant flower. A wind blew among the pillars, stirring Ella's russet hair, crooning softly in her ear. And it was then that she began singing the song.
Drink to me, O me, thine eyes, and I will pledge with mine.
Ella, what's that song?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? I've never heard it before. Did you compose it?
No. Yes. No, I don't know, really. I don't even know what the words are. They're in another language. It was part of the dream I had, I guess.
Oh. You know, you haven't been yourself lately. It might do you good if we went away to the Blue Mountains for a week or so.
What?
Did you hear what I said?
I'm sorry. I was watching the sky.
You're certainly interested in the sky tonight.
It's very beautiful.
Well, what about my suggestion? Shall we leave for the Blue Mountains in the morning?
You mean go away now? Oh, no.
No? Why not? Why don't you want to go?
I don't know. I just don't want to, that's all. Oh, leave a kiss in the cup and not ask
who. Ela, I'm sick of that silly song. It's late. Let us sleep.
From the crystal walls poured a soft carpeting of mist to support Ela where she lay down to sleep. But through the night she tossed restlessly, until just at dawn the dream recurred.
Ela! Ela, wake up!
What? Oh, what is it?
You've been dreaming again. You talked in your sleep.
Did I?
Yes. What were you dreaming?
Oh, the ship. It came from the sky again. And the tall man stepped out and talked with me. Telling me little jokes and laughing.
What else happened?
And then this Captain York... Oh, I can't. It's all so silly.
Tell me!
He said I was beautiful. And then he kissed me.
I thought so. What else?
Why, Eel, you're so bad-tempered. It's only a dream.
Is it? You know I can read your mind. You can't keep secrets from me.
Well, all that happened was this Captain York told me... Well, he told me he'd take me away in his ship, into the sky. Take me back to his planet with him. It's quite ridiculous, really.
Ridiculous, is it? You should have heard yourself. Fawning on him, talking to him, singing with him all night. In your dream, he landed in Green Valley, didn't he?
Please.
And he told you he was coming today.
Yes. But what's come over you? It was only a dream. You can't be jealous of that.
No. No, I suppose not. Forgive me. I'm being childish.
Eel, you're sick. You've been working too hard.
No, I'm all right. But perhaps you're right. Maybe I could use a little relaxation.
Yes.
I think I'll take the morning off and go hunting.
Hunting?
Yes, in Green Valley.
Numbly, she watched him go to a closet and draw forth an evil-looking weapon. And then her husband was gone, walking toward Green Valley. And Ela waited, watching the sky for an unknown thing, trembling with a nameless fear. And then it happened. A whirring, rushing sound. The warmth as of a giant fire passing in the air. The gleam of metal in the sky.
He's come! It's true! The dream is true!
The rocket vanished over the hill. The sky was empty again, and trembling, Ela waited again, looking toward Green Valley and seeing nothing, listening for sounds and hearing nothing, until... A shot sounded, very sharply, the sound of the evil weapon.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Her body jerked with the sound, and she wanted to scream and never stop screaming. For now she knew the dream could never come true. There was nothing left but the song... The strange and fine and beautiful song.
Drink to me only with thine eyes, and I will pledge with mine. Or leave a kiss within the cup.
All right, that's the first portion of Dimension X. I said it right this time, Lisa.
I didn't say anything.
August 18th, 19th. She makes fun of me if I make a mistake. You know, I mean, you're supposed to have my back. Throw me under the bus.
Well, it's just...
Martian Chronicles with host fun. Norman Rose is heard on NBC. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. We have plenty more classic radio shows for you all the way up till 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's take a quick break, then we'll be right back. Well, I feel like I have a PhD now in making coffee, Lisa. While Dimension X was on... We had the owner of Calibre Coffee in here in South Barrington, Blaine Bontempo, right? Did I say it right? Well, hang on a second. Did I say that right?
You said it correctly.
Blaine Bontempo. So it sounds like an Italian name. Bontempo.
It is that.
Yes. Like Amari is an Italian name as well. And also Ben Connors. That does not sound Italian, Ben.
It is not.
What are you? What's your nationality?
Irish, Scottish.
Irish, okay. Well, you know, St. Paddy's Day was yesterday, so that's very good. All right, so they're in here, and they are these guys are experts when it comes to making coffee, right, Lisa?
Yes, and we are quickly becoming very knowledgeable, and so we want to share this with our listeners.
All right, so in the Arboretum of Barrington, South Barrington, Calibre Coffee, is that the first location? There's going to be more, but that's the first one?
That is the first location,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So tell us a quick little profile on this privately owned business so we can, because we're going to have a special for our listeners, which we'll talk about in a minute. But tell us about Calibre Coffee.
Sure. When I look back in time, I was always intrigued by being in a coffee house. And being on the corporate side, it was kind of fun to go in and sit in a coffee house, never thinking I would own one. And when Calibre Coffee, which was a year old, and we found out it was available for sale, so my partner Chirag Patel and I came in and bought the coffee house, which was 2 years ago. We bought it on Valentine's Day in 2014, and so we've owned it for 2 years. We made a lot of changes, but what we tried to do when we bought the business, we hired Ben back into the firm. We've added six barista to our staff, and our focus and our culture is to have expertise in coffee and to set an environment where the coffee experience is a good one. So you got to have fun.
Well, I mean, we just experienced amazing what they did with this pour-over coffee, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, we're hoping you can tell us what makes your coffee house different and unique compared to all of the others.
Well, I think being an independently owned coffee house, we can make a decision in a minute. And, for example, what does make us different is the coffee experience created by our barista and by all of us as a team. But the second thing is we decided we wanted to be an international coffee house. With all the changes in the world, internationalism is here. So we got some customers together, and we had customers from Greece, Cuba, Puerto Rico. We asked them for ideas. In the course of the first 9 months of our business, we made the decision to go in international. What made us different, we made that decision within 6 months. We had created a coffee menu for not where the bean comes from, but how the coffee's prepared.
And what's on that menu, the international menu?
Well, there are eight different coffees. We could name the countries. There's Italy, there's Puerto Rico, there is Cuba, there is Japan, there is Australia, Austria, Greece,
and we've got one here from Ethiopia that you brought, correct?
Right, but that's not one of the international coffees we make.
Okay.
That is a variety of coffee that's furnished by Intelligentsia.
Okay.
Which I might add, the coffee that we have, one of the independents that we have can bring to our customers, we don't have one roaster providing all of our coffee. We just didn't want to be subject to the kind of trade relationships that could exist for our benefit or for their benefit. So we have three roasters, two of which are in Chicago, Metropolis and Intelligentsia.
So Ben was showing us the pour-over process, and I'm wondering if you can let us know why that is a really unique process.
Absolutely. The pour-over, in short, will change your life. Perhaps that's an overstatement, but it will ruin regular coffee for you.
We'll take it.
The first difference is that the barista or, you know, the home brewer is able to control the extraction rather than just spraying the grounds like a normal drip coffee machine will do. The barista or the brewer is able to evenly extract the coffee at every level from beginning to end. And that results in a much more flavorful and balanced cup. What I brewed for you guys was on the Chemex. The Chemex is known to heighten the clarity of the coffee. It gets all the oils of the coffee blocked by the thickness of the filter. And what's left is just crisp, clean, delicious coffee.
We are quickly becoming coffee connoisseurs.
I can't wait to drink this coffee because Ben was doing this pour-over process. It was amazing. I mean, Mike, I know, is a big coffee lover, too.
Yeah, I drink a lot of coffee, but watching this guy, he's like a scientist in a lab.
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of things going on,
folks,
here.
Folks, if you're anywhere near the Arboretum, even if you're not, take a ride out. The Arboretum of South Barrington is located 100 West Higgins Road. And you have to go. It's right next to the IPIC Theater.
Right at the intersection of Route 59.
Right. And it's called Calibre Coffee. Now, we're going to have Ben and Blaine back right after the news because you're going to offer a special to our listeners. If you come in this week up until Wednesday, we'll tell you all about it. I'm going to let Ben and Blaine tell you about it. But you have to check this out because I can't wait to drink this. It smells amazing.
It does.
I mean, I love coffee. I didn't realize there was so many.
The studio is aromatic.
This is incredible. All right. Welcome back to the show. I'm Carl Amari, your host here, till 2 o'clock in the morning tonight. And then every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 till 2 a.m. with Lisa Wolf, my co-host.
Yeah, you're stuck with me.
The vivacious Lisa.
I'm not going anywhere.
And you know what, Lisa?
But Carl.
You know what? My life has changed, Ben. You know what? And I'm going to tell you something.
It's not an overstatement.
I drink a lot of coffee. This is, I'm not kidding you, this is the best coffee I've ever had. But you know what? It's a whole process. It took like 4 minutes to do this, right, mm-hmm. Ben?
That's right.
And this is amazing. I don't need any cream or sugar with this. I always have cream and sugar with my coffee. This does not need it. And this is a pour over. And this is a special that they do at Calibre Coffee in the Arboretum of Barrington. And Lisa's holding something.
Well,
what
I'm looking at
there?
This fantastic presentation of how the coffee comes, and it's on like a wooden plank.
You should be the model for Calibre Coffee.
Yes.
They should take
some
pictures
I'm
of
the
you.
Vanna White here, yeah. And it's got a spoon and a cup, and it's got an international flag. Do you have international food there as well?
Well, let's talk about that tray first.
Okay.
When we serve the coffees from the various countries, we attach the flag to it, and the flag is one of the 8 coffees that we serve that are internationally mm-hmm. prepared. So that's the way we serve the coffees on the tray. And so it's a way of promoting the internationalism of our coffee house.
And it's beautiful besides, and very unique.
Yes. All right, so we only have a minute, and we want to give that special out to our listeners, because if there's anyone near the Arboretum of Barrington, from tomorrow through the end of day Wednesday. You close what time on Wednesday?
5 p.m.
At 5 p.m. Okay, so if you're anywhere near the Arboretum, stop in to Calibre Coffee, and here's what they're going to do for you, right?
Yeah, from tomorrow morning when we open the doors, 7:30 in the morning, until Wednesday, 5 p.m., 15% off to any of you guys listening who come in and say WGN.
WGN.
That's all you got to do. It's
right,
so easy. Three letters.
Do this because it's like I've never had coffee before until I've had this. You have to check this out. Get the pour over. That's what it's called.
I will remind our listeners. I will post the special on Facebook. So if you need a reminder, you can go to our Facebook page at WGN Radio Theater. I will post the address and the name and the special so you can head right over.
Yeah. All right. So I want to thank you, Ben Connors and Blaine Buntempo. I love that. It's very Italian. Buntempo. I love that.
It's a all good right. time.
Yes, it is a very good time. Okay. So you know what? You'll have a good time if you go to Calibre Coffee. It's in the Arboretum of Barrington, 100 West Higgins. It's on the corner of Higgins and 59. They're right next to the IPIC Theaters, and you'll have the best cup of coffee you've ever had. And they also have other things on the menu, too, not just coffee there, right? Real quick. What other items do you have?
Absolutely. We have 18 different loose leaf teas, pretty much anything you can think of. We got French, Italian sodas, hot cocoa.
Awesome. Well, I will. You picked up a new customer in me because I will be in there because I go to the Arboretum a lot. I will stop by. Thank you, Ben, and thank you, Blaine. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
Thank you.
All right,
both.
Let's get back to this. We are tuning in to Dimension X. This is Martian Chronicles written by Ray Bradbury. The conclusion now on Dimension X.
But still the rockets came. The next ship came down from the stars and the black velocities and the silent gulfs of space and landed by night near a Martian city. The men made their way to the outer rim of the dreaming city, and then Jeff Spender went in to reconnoiter while the others watched and waited for something to stir in the haunted city, some gray form to rise, some voice to break the unearthly stillness. Where were the people?
Where were the Martians? Nothing stirred to disturb the silence until...
Halt! Who goes there?
Don't shoot!
Hold it, Parker. Let's Spender and his party. They're coming back.
Captain Wilder!
Over here! Well?
Captain, we've searched the city. People were living here last week.
People?
Martians.
Where are they now?
Dead.
Dead? What did they die of?
You won't believe it, Captain. Chickenpox.
Good Lord, no.
Yes. No resistance to an Earth disease, I guess.
So the other rocket did get through to Mars.
It looks like it, Captain. God only knows what the Martians did to them. But at least we know what they did to the Martians.
You mean they're all dead?
Yes. This planet is through.
Hey, you hear that, guys? We're safe. Break out a bottle, Cookie. Let's have a drink to celebrate.
Stop it, Parker. Put down that bottle.
What's eating you, Spender? The planet's ours now. We got a christener, don't we? I christen thee the city of... Hey, Park Hill City.
Park Hill, I warned you.
All right, Spender, that's enough. That'll cost you a $50 fine. Cookie, McClure, take care of Park Hill. Spender, you come with me. All right, Spender. Why did you hit him?
I don't know, Captain. I was ashamed, I guess. Ashamed of Sam Parkhill and the noise and the spectacle the whole crew is making.
It's been a long trip. It's only natural they'd want to have their fling.
Yes, but where's their sense of what's right? Their respect for what's happened here? Captain, a race builds itself for a million years, refines itself, builds cities like this one, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty and... And then it dies. Of what? Not anything fine or majestic or fitting, but a dirty little thing like chickenpox. And Sam Parkhill wants to celebrate.
I know, Spender, but you've got to remember you've a different way of seeing things.
I'm seeing things all right. I'm seeing what we'll do to Mars. We'll rip it up, rip the skin off, ruin it the way we've ruined our own planet. Captain, look at the city. It may be the last time you'll ever see it this way.
Beautiful in the moonlight, isn't it?
Yes. There's a poem by Byron that describes it and how the Martians would feel tonight if there were any of them left. So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving and the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath and the soul wears out the breast. And the heart must pause to breathe and love itself must rest. Though the night was made for loving and the day returns too soon. Yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
Without a word, the Earthmen stood and looked at the city. The bottle lay shattered at Sam Parkhill's feet, and the sour stench of liquor filled the cool air. The men of Earth had come to Mars. The men of Earth came to Mars. They came because they were afraid or unafraid, because they were happy or unhappy, because they felt like pilgrims or did not feel like pilgrims. The government posters screamed, "There's work for you in the sky. See Mars!" The men shuffled forward, all kinds of men, all coming for different reasons. The rockets came like drums beating in the night. They came like locusts swarming and settling in blooms of rosy smoke. Mars was a distant shore, and the settlers spread upon it in waves. First the pioneers and builders, then the people of civilization. Some came because they were afraid of a coming war on Earth. Some came because they were afraid of nothing. Some came to escape from the smell of the subways and the cabbage tenements. And some came from houses like the one in Ohio. It was a good house, the house in Ohio, and for 6 years the family had lived there contentedly, enjoying music and poetry and the rich, warm things of life. For the house had been built to be lived in the year 2020. It contained all the latest automatic devices, from talking book recorders to singing clocks. As the family rose and dressed, the beds whirred electronically and made themselves. In the kitchen, the stove sighed and ejected from its warm interior 8 eggs, sunny side up, 12 bacon slices, 2 coffees, and 2 glasses of milk.
7-9, breakfast time. Come and dine. 7-9.
Beside the breakfast table, the facsimile machine clacked and deposited the morning paper on the table. The headlines today spoke ominously of the danger of a coming war, and the man frowned as he read the news.
Today is August 4th, 2026. Insurance, gas, and atom heat bills are due, and today, remember, the family has planned a picnic.
Gee, Dad, are we really going?
Sure, Timmy, why not?
It's raining out.
It's not raining where we're going, son. Now run upstairs, pack your fishing tackle. We're going on our picnic, all right.
Okay, Dad.
Bill, are you sure we ought to go?
Yes. Have you seen the headlines this morning?
Looks bad, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. The rocket's ready. All we have to do is pack and take off.
I know, but, well, flying to Mars, it seems so crazy. Well, all right, then, we'll go. Should we tell the children why we're going?
No, not yet. Let them enjoy the picnic.
The house went on with its appointed tasks.
9:15, time to clean. 9:15, time to clean.
Out of the molding darted hundreds of tiny mechanical mice, all rubber and metal. They sucked up the dust and dirt in the house and popped back into their burrows. In the walls, relays clicked, memory tapes glided under electric eyes, recorded voices moved under steel needles.
12 o'clock, 2 o'clock. 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, tick-tock, 8 o'clock.
Evening came. In the living room, the hearth fire bloomed out of nothing, and the phonograph spoke from beside the fireplace.
Mrs. McClellan, what poem would you like to hear this evening? Mr. McClellan, since you express no preference, I shall select at random from among your favorites. Sarah Teasdale, There Will Come Soft Rains.
There will come soft rains and the smell of the ground, and swallows circling with their shimmering sound, and frogs in the pool singing at night, and wild plum trees in tremulous white. Robins will wear their feathery fire, whistling their whims on a low fence wire, and not one will know of war, not one will care at last when it is done. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly, and spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone.
The phonograph finished the poem, but there was no one there to hear, for the family had gone to Mars. On the Martian desert beside the highway, there rose a blare of red and yellow neon lights that spelled the death of Jeff Spender's dream. Sam's hot dog stand was what the sign read. And Sam, of course, was the same Sam Parkhill who had fought with Spender years before. 10,000 rockets were reported leaving soon for Mars, with 100,000 hungry customers. And Sam wanted to be ready for them.
Hey, look up there, Elmer.
Mm-hmm.
See that green star up there? That's Earth. Good old wonderful Earth. Makes you feel almost reverent, don't it?
Yeah.
Sam, you're hungry and you're starved. Something. That's a poem I learned at school. Come on, Earth, send me your rockets. Here's Sam Parkhill with the only hot dog stand on Mars.
Sam, what if the rockets don't come?
What if there's a war on Earth?
Don't worry. They're coming all right. Ain't nothing going to happen to spoil my plans, baby. I figured it all out.
Sam! Hey, Sam, look up there. Earth!
Well, what? Oh, no.
It's catching fire. It's burning.
Oh, no. That can't be Earth. Helma, they can't do this to me. I got all our money invested in this place.
Go ahead, Sam. Switch on more lights. Turn up the music. Get the hot dogs on the fire. There'll be another batch of customers coming along in about 100 million years.
Oh, no, it couldn't be.
What a swell spot for a hot dog stand. Let you in on a little secret, Sam. This looks like it's going to be an off-season.
The light beam radio crackled with the news. By morning, the shelves of the luggage store were empty, and the rockets were blasting off, headed back to Earth. In a few days, everyone was gone, and the planet of Mars once more lay deserted and silent. And then, after all the rest had gone, one last rocket landed on Mars. A small, family-sized rocket come all the way from Earth. It seemed a long way to go for a picnic, but Dad had suggested a fishing trip, and Mother thought the whole family would enjoy a vacation. So here they were, floating down a Martian canal, with Timothy sitting in the back of the boat with Dad and Mother up front holding Alice the baby, and the deserted Martian towns drifting slowly by.
Dad?
What is it, Timmy?
When do we see the Martians? You promised we would.
Soon, Tim, soon.
Oh, but William, the last Martians died out years ago. They're a dead race now.
Not quite. Don't worry, son, I'll show you some real live Martians later on.
Gee, this is swell. I wish we didn't ever have to go home. How long can we stay?
1 million years.
1 million years?
Yes. It's time we told you, son, we're not going home. This is where we'll live from now on.
But what about the rocket? What about Ohio?
There's nothing there now but ruins. The last Earth radio just went off the air. That means the war is over and Earth is finished. We're going to blow up our rocket and start all over. See if we can't build a better world up here.
You mean Mars is going to be our home?
Yes. I hope you don't mind too much.
No, sir. But what about the Martians? When do we get to see them?
There they are, son. Look down at the water.
I don't see anything there.
Beside the boat. Look at the reflections in the water.
But that's us down there. Just you and me and Mom and the baby.
Yes, son. You see, we're the Martians now.
For a long, silent moment, Timmy stared down at the reflections of the family in the waters, and the Martian stared back up at him. Then he lifted his eyes to the deep ocean sky, trying once more to see Earth and the house he had always called home. But Earth was too far away, and the house was now only a heap of radioactive rubble. Only one wall remained standing, and within the wall a voice spoke again and again and again.
Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly, and spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone, 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 that we were gone.
Today is October 5th, 2026. Today is October 5th, 2026.
You have just heard The Martian Chronicles, a dramatization of highlights from the new novel by Ray Bradbury.
The world of
Dimension X.
The preceding was transcribed on NBC.
All right, that's Dimension X with the Martian Chronicles. Host Norman Rose there. That was written by Ray Bradbury. That's from August 18th, 1950. I had the great pleasure, Lisa, of working with Ray Bradbury on a collection that I released years ago. It was 60 of the greatest sci-fi shows, and I contacted Ray Bradbury, and we got to work together, and we picked out, of all the thousands and thousands of classic radio shows, he and I sort of collaborated on what the best shows were. Of course, The War of the Worlds was part of that. Some of his material and other writers, Isaac Asimov, people like that, Robert Bloch. And we put this collection out, and it's out, and you can get it. It's called The 60 Greatest Radio Shows Chosen by Ray Bradbury. And wow. I produced it and worked with him, and it was he's passed now, but he's a terrific, terrific guy. What a
talent.
Yeah, and I've interviewed him. We play interviews on it. We'll do that. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. What's going on, Lisa Wolf?
Hey, Carl. How are you? You're making me laugh, Carl. I've got the giggles.
You know what? We're just going to do, we don't have to give any information on Celebrity Scoop, okay? We're just going to play a clip.
Right.
Because Lisa doesn't have her information.
Carl has his information from another day. So we're going to make this happen.
All right. In this hour of the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to play the Eddie Cantor Show from October 8th, 1948, with special guest Humphrey Bogart. Then in our next hour, it's Howard Duff in The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective. But Lisa didn't do what she was supposed to do this
week.
Don't
you dare throw me under the bus.
And
this is all Carl.
What's the weather like down there?
But I'm not going there.
Yeah?
So
all right.
Let's.
This show is brought to you in part by Cats Pride. Dum, dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
All right, what we're going to do now, we're going to give away a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza if you can identify this voice. Now, this is the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Can you identify this voice? Very famous celebrity. Here he is as the star of 2014's Birdman.
I'm broke. I'm not sleeping, at all. And this play kind of starting to feel like a miniature, deformed version of myself.
What a great job. This movie was phenomenal. I remember you telling me about this movie.
Yeah,
you were like, you have to go to the show and see this movie.
I did say that.
So I did, because I always listen
to what you say. If I say it, usually run the other way.
Everything you say to do,
sure.
I do.
Sure.
All right, call us now if you know who that is, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We are back. This is the crazy episode of the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I'm broke. I'm not sleeping, at all. And this play kind of starting to feel like a miniature, deformed version of myself.
We have James on the line from Norwich. Hey, James.
Hi, Lisa. Great show. That's, of course, Michael Keaton and Birdman.
You are absolutely right, and you are a winner. And you know what you've won, a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza.
I love that stuff.
Oh, me too. You can check them out at loumalnati's.com or visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. We hope you have a terrific pizza. I love it there.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. And Cats Pride, our sponsor, has a drawing every single month. Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cats Pride, comes in here live. And what does he do,
Lisa?
He's
going to pick one lucky winner to win an entire year's supply of the finest kitty litter on the market, Cats Pride. So what you need to do is send us a picture with you and your cat and your name and your cat's name, city and state, and send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. catspridephoto@gmail.com. One lucky winner will be chosen at random, and that lucky winner will win a year's supply of the best cat litter.
And Mike Estella puts all of those pictures up on our WGN Radio Theater Facebook page, do you not?
I absolutely do, and you can go on to Facebook, check them out, look up WGN Radio Theater, like us, and check out all the photos.
You know what? It's great to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
And Dan will be here the last Sunday of March, which is right around the corner, so get your pictures in right away so you can be a part of our drawing.
Right, and if you don't want to be in the picture, that's fine. Just send a picture of your kitty cat. If you want to tell us a story about your kitty cat, that's fun too.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Okay. Send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com.
Yeah, I said
right?
that. Yep.
I know, but I just like to.
You like to repeat it. I know.
I know. All right. Well,
Okay.
Want to play some classic radio?
I sure do.
All right. Well, you know what? Eddie Cantor was a very famous comedian, singer, movie star. He was all over the place. They called him Old Banjo Eyes. And he had a radio show, and he has a guest on his 1948 episode from October 8th. That guest was Humphrey Bogart. I thought it'd be fun to play this. Here's part one now of the Eddie Cantor Show.
Pabst Blue Ribbon, finest beer served anywhere, proudly presents
the Eddie Cantor Pabst Blue Ribbon Show.
With our guest stars, Humphrey Bogart and Dinah Shore. Billy Burke, the sportsman, Cookie Fairchild's orchestra, yours truly, Harry Bonzel, and starring your man Friday, Eddie Cantor.
Thank you. Don't overdo it, you know. Harry,
yes,
Harry Bonzel, listen.
Yeah.
There's a great fight at the Legion Stadium tonight here in Hollywood, and I'm going to take you with me, all right?
Oh, well, I'm afraid I can't go, Eddie. I have to sit home with a baby.
Yeah. Why?
Why?
Why should a father have to be a babysitter? Let me tell you something, Harry. When my mind travels back to when I was a baby,
Yeah, well, go on.
Give me time. For me, it's a pretty long trip. I'm only fooling, Harry. It really wasn't so long ago.
It wasn't.
No.
Listen, when you were a baby, your sitter was Sitting Bull.
Is that so?
Well, but, Eddie, I never have any trouble sitting with my baby because he's such a happy little fellow. He's always laughing, you know.
He is?
Oh, you ought to hear how he laughs. He has my sunny disposition, you know. He even looks like me.
Yeah. And he laughs?
I don't think things will be so funny to him when he gets old enough to go to school. I was reading in the paper there may not be any room for him. Gosh, every day the schools are getting more crowded.
Crowded?
Yeah.
Crowded the school?
Sure.
Let me tell you something, Harry. This morning I visited the classroom. They were arranging the children in layers. One little boy got the mumps, pushed 12 kids out of the window. I said to the teacher, "Look, teacher, there are two kids sitting in the wastebasket." She said, "Somebody must have tilted it. There's supposed to be three of them in there."
Oh. No, Eddie. Well, really, some civic-minded people ought to do something about the crowded conditions in our school.
You're right, Harry. When I was a kid, along with other civic-minded fellows like Jack Benny and George Jessel, we saw to it that there was plenty of room in our school.
How did you do that?
We never showed up.
Well, Eddie, listen to me. If the three of you never showed up, didn't they send the truant officer after you?
Sure, but by the time he caught up with us, Jessel and I were already married and Jack Benny owned the school.
No.
But, Harry, yeah. Since you can't come to the fights with me, I may as well go alone.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my car, and I'll tell you what I'll...
Hello, Eddie.
Well, Billy Burke.
Oh, Eddie, I was so excited when I drove up and saw your car at the curb. Now we're double parked.
Yeah. We're double parked?
Yes, my car is on top of yours.
Billy, you say your car is on top of mine?
Mm-hmm. Isn't it thrilling? Now you can drive me home piggyback.
Piggyback? Piggyback?
Oh, isn't it just like a man to get so excited? Eddie, only this morning I was thinking, I'm glad I'm not a man.
Oh, why?
Well, none of my clothes would fit me. Oh, I have some lovely furs, too. Yesterday I put a leash on my dog, Rover, and we went to I.J. Fox.
Your furrier?
No. Rover is furrier than both of us.
Oh. Harry, take her, will you?
Yeah, I'll try. Listen, Billy, Eddie has two tickets for the fights tonight. Would you like to go with him?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm too busy. In behalf of the election board, I'm trying to find a house where we can put a voting booth.
Oh, a furnished house?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Frankly, I had a vacancy in mind.
You still have it.
Oh.
But But, Billy, I'm glad you're working so hard to see that our election comes off all right. Confidentially, Billy, which of the candidates is your favorite, Truman or Dewey?
To help me make up my mind, I went to the woods and picked a daisy. As I pulled off the petals, I said to myself, I love Tom, I love Harry, Tom, Harry, Tom, Harry.
Well, which one turned out to be your favorite?
Sylvester.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Did you say Sylvester?
Yes, he was in the woods with me when I picked the daisy.
Good night, Billy.
What, Eddie?
Harry, if you're going to be sitting up all alone with the baby, I'll drop in on you after the fights, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Besides, I want to see your new house.
Oh, you'll love it, Eddie.
Yeah?
I put the house up myself. It's prefabricated, you know. When you come over to see it, just ring the bell.
I'll do that.
Now, be sure to ring the bell.
Why is it so important that I ring the bell?
Well, if you knock on the door, I'll have to put the house up all over again.
Of all the silly things that happen...
Oh, Eddie.
Well, Dinah Shore... Dinah, how about coming to the fights with me?
Oh, I can't, Eddie. I'm staying home with George tonight.
George, aren't you being a little silly? Why do you want to sit with George Montgomery when you can be sitting with me? You're not being very smart.
Eddie, let me be stupid in my own little way.
I never saw anyone as crazy about a guy as you are about George. But okay, so sing your song in your own little way, and then I'll be off to the fight. You want to sing Bluebird of Happiness, huh, Dinah?
With his plow. Makes no difference who you are. It's all the same somehow. The king upon his throne, the jester at his feet, the shop girl, the actress, the woman on the street. It's a life of smiles and a life of tears. It's a life of hopes and a life of fears. A blinding torrent of rain and a brilliant burst of sun. A biting, tearing pain and bubbling, sparkling fun. If things don't look so cheerful, just show a little fight. For every bit of darkness, there's a little bit of light. For every bit of hatred, there's a little bit of love. For every cloudy morning, there's a midnight moon above. And so remember this, life is no abyss. Somewhere there's a bluebird of happiness.
Fine, fine, fine. Fine, I can't tell you, but God, that recitation, it has such heart, such sentiment. Such feeling.
Oh, you're sweet, Eddie. I'm glad you liked it.
I loved it. But, Dinah, so much more could be done with it.
So much more?
Oh, yeah. Would you mind reciting it again? And I'll show you how it really should go. Music, Cookie, please.
Now?
I'll tell you when.
All right.
Now.
The poet with his pen, the peasant with his plow.
Would gladly swap that pen and plow for a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon right now.
Oh, Eddie.
Go on, Dinah, continue. It's a living. Go ahead.
Oh, wait a minute. The king upon his throne, the beggar in the square.
Night and day you'll hear them say, yes, sir, finest beer served anywhere. While traveling along life's highway, your days will always be sunny. You'll have nothing to fear as long as you have Blue Ribbon beer, providing you also have money. Trouble may haunt you, sorrow may taunt you. The future may not look too balmy. Life may be bare, but don't give up in despair. Try a glass of Pabst with a slice of salami.
Oh, Ed.
The scene, the scene is a cottage high on a hill. The husband has been away. One day he comes home, never more to roam. With his wife and his kids he will stay. He embraces his wife. She's the love of his life. And no love ever was greater. Being home was just grand. Then he drops his wife's hand and goes straight to the refrigerator. He lets out a roar. Then he runs out the door. His life, his world has collapsed. He has a wife, he has kids and a beautiful home. But what good is all that without Pabst? I can't go out finish it. You're an actress.
Oh, Eddie. And that is why we say go buy a case today of a blended, splendid Blue Ribbon happiness.
Thank you, Dinah.
You hear it everywhere. Finest beer served anywhere. 33 fine brews blended into one great beer. You hear
it. Oh, Cookie. Say, Cookie Fairchild.
Yes, Master.
Cookie, would you like to come to the fights with me?
Yeah. Oh, heavens to Petrillo. My wife is going out with the baby, and I must stay home.
You're as henpecked as Harry. Just because your wife is going out with a baby, you have to stay home alone?
Oh, not alone. She got a sitter for me.
A sitter? Wait a minute. Every night, Mrs. Von Zell goes out and poor Harry is locked in with the baby? Cookie, you've given me an idea. I'm going over to see Harry.
Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop. Wish Mom was here instead of your pop. I should go out to the fights. But when I'd get back, she'd be in the hall. Down would come Harry, cradle and all.
All right, that's the first portion of the Eddie Cantor Show, October 8th, 1948. Special guest Humphrey Bogart. He'll make an appearance here in a few moments. And then Lauren Bacall, which you resemble, Lisa. Lauren Bacall.
People tell me I look exactly like her.
I know. All right, so you know what? I am, and I know you are too, Lisa. We are having do they pay us for this? I mean, we shouldn't get paid to do this job when we eat food and have drink like the coffee we
eat
had
food,
earlier.
Have drink.
And this amazing food. And Chris Panagakis from Carrie Ale House is in here, and he made this incredible pizza and sliders and French fries and drink for us. And I want to welcome him to the show. What's up, my friend Chris? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are
you? Yeah, get on that mic a little more. All right, very good. And you made this. It's unbelievable, my friend.
Thank you. This is
incredible. So tell me what this slider is all about. Tell me what this is that
I'm
eating.
It's a short rib slider. It's braised beef. We braise it for 4 hours, rub it in Asian spices, and then we throw on a sake-infused coleslaw on top with some lemongrass. It kind of cuts right through the richness
of
the meat.
That's what that is, huh? Yeah. Yep. Oh, wow. This is good. And these fries, what is this? These are the best fries I've ever eaten. What is this?
So that's poutine. It's a Canadian dish. We use duck confit. Throw it on there with some rosemary pepper gravy and some fresh Wisconsin cheese curds. Melt it all up in there. And
the pizza?
The pizza is our fig and bacon pizza. We take the figs, we soak them in brandy, throw a little bacon on there, some fresh goat cheese, and frisée with a balsamic reduction we make in-house.
Yeah, I'm a pretty good peanut butter and jelly maker myself, so I'd give you a little run for your money, I'm sure, you know, in the kitchen. No, I can't cook anything. I'm coming to Cary Ale House, I'll tell you that. The address is 203 or 208? 208 West Main Street, Cary, Illinois. We are taking some pictures of this because some people watch us on WGN radio.com, right?
Sure.
But if you are not watching us, if you're listening to us, we have some pictures that we took of this food, and we are going to post it on the Facebook page. Right, Lisa?
Yeah. Can you tell us a few of your other specialties that people come back for over and over?
Yeah. Our number one seller actually are cheese curds. So we take the same Wisconsin cheese curds that are on the poutine. We roll them in a house-made stout batter, drop them in the fryer, and we make a wonderful jalapeno jelly to go with it, and people just go crazy over it.
Where did these recipes come from?
Our head chef, Tom McCleary, helped us get the menu going. My partner, Dustin, and I kind of created the main core of the menu, kind of what we wanted to do, and handed it over to him, and he just kind of put his own twist on it and made it work.
Is this a family-friendly restaurant?
Yes, it is.
Now, it's a gastro pub. What does that mean? You have to educate me. What does that mean, a gastro pub?
Basically, it's a upscale take on pub food with a little bit of a twist, a culinary twist. So it's chef-driven more than a normal pub fare, like, you know, just a standard burger and fry joint.
Yeah, Mike knocked me over when the sliders came out. I literally have a bruise on my arm. How was the slider, Mike?
They were excellent. You know, it was taking Lisa wanted to take the pictures of the food first, and that was taking so long. So once she took them, I had to jump
right
in.
But see, Mike knows karate, so I just get out of his way. This is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. I definitely, you know, I'm going to be in there. You'll see me a lot in there. Okay, so folks, go to Cary Ale House, 208 West Main Street, Cary, Illinois. We're going to hold you over, going to do the news here, hold you over, and then tell us a little bit more about Cary Ale Pub, Cary Ale House. We come back from the news. All right, welcome back to the show. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. My co-host is the effervescent Lisa Wolf.
I'm dancing to some tunes from Dan Long. He picks the best music for us.
He does. And we have Chris Panagakis in from Cary Ale House. His partner in the business is Dustin Davies. And you guys have really created a terrific restaurant in Cary. And he brought some food in, and we're gorging ourselves.
We also want to talk about your wide selection of beers as one of your specialties there.
Yes, we have over 85 different beers available, 12 of which are on draft, and we try to keep a rotating draft going so you can always try something new. Any given Friday, we might run out of a beer or two during service, but it gives our customers another opportunity to try something new.
Chris, have you tasted all of them?
Of course I have.
Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
All right, so Chris has a special for our listeners. Whenever we have someone in a business you should know, we always ask them, hey, could you give a special to our listeners? So if they're listening, they're in the area and they can stop in, they feel special. So what is the special that you have for our WGN listeners?
Come on in, mention that you heard us on the WGN radio, and we'll go ahead and get you 10% off one food item. And that'll run until April 30th.
Okay, so...
And, yeah, I will post this on our Facebook with the name and the address and the special. So if people want to check it out again, they can go to our Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater.
Yep, go to Cary Ale House, 208 West Main Street, Cary, Illinois. The website is CaryAleHouseBrewing.com, right?
Correct.
CaryAleHouseBrewing.com. Chris, good to meet you. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for offering our listeners a 10% off one food item all the way till the end of April. Okay, let's get back to this now. We're tuning in to the Eddie Cantor Show. You'll hear Humphrey Bogart coming on here. Let's go back to October 8th, 1948 for the conclusion of the Eddie Cantor Show.
Oh, Harry!
What?
Harry.
Hello, Eddie.
Harry, get your hat. You're going with me and enjoy the fights.
What are you saying? What about the baby?
Don't worry about little Harry. I called the baby bureau, and they're sending over a sitter.
Oh. A sitter?
A sitter.
A sitter is coming here to spring me. I'll be able to walk out of here a free man. Free, 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 do you hear? I'll be able to take my place in society again.
Coming next week to your neighborhood theater.
I've already reserved two ringside seats, Harry. As soon as the sitter gets here. Yeah. I'll get it. Well, Humphrey Bogart.
Hey, Cantor.
Yeah?
Where are you getting your babysitters from?
Humphrey, you're the babysitter the Bureau sent?
Yeah, I just muscled into this racket to get a little experience on taking care of babies. You see, me and Lauren are expecting a stork in January.
Did you say in January?
Yeah, next January 15th. I already printed up the cards.
But, Bogey, you shouldn't have printed the date. You can't always tell about those things.
Listen, that stork better show up January 15th or he's a dead duck.
Pardon me for eavesdropping, Mr. Bogart, but you are not taking care of my baby.
What's the matter? The baby Bureau thinks I got enough experience, so they sent me here on my first case.
Well, if this is your first case, how did you get experience as a babysitter?
And for 2 weeks, they had me doing it with a daddy doll.
Well, no, I was expecting them to send a woman to sit with my baby.
And what's wrong with a man? You know, my Uncle Charlie was a sitter. Of course, poor Uncle Charlie ain't around anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened?
While he was sitting, the warden pulled the switch.
Harry, look, Harry. We don't want to miss the fights. Maybe Bogart will be all right. He likes children. He's going to have a baby of his own.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. You see, that's the idea, Vonzell. Before I handle my own kid, I'd like to practice with yours.
What? Practice?
Yeah.
Well, you're not taking care of my baby.
Who says I ain't?
Who says you ain't? I says you ain't. I just ain't sold on you as a babysitter.
Not sold, huh? Oh. Well, let me give you a little sales talk. Quote. Unquote.
Your salesmanship is winning me over. I'm practically sold. Who says he ain't?
Oh, fine. Listen, you may weaken Eddie, but not me. It's my baby, and I'm... Bogart? Sir? You get this straight. I'm not going to hire you. What are your rates?
I don't want any money. Taking care of the kid will be a pleasure.
Oh, well, now it's still a job. I think you ought to take something.
Oh, don't worry. When you leave, I'll look around.
Now, you see.
Oh, the baby's crying. I'll see what I can do to quiet him down.
Yeah, look it. Bogey, you'll find a box of powder on the Bureau.
Yeah, what do I need with powder? If I don't look good enough for the kid the way I am... He can get another sitter.
No, no. No, it's not for you. You're supposed to dust the baby with that powder.
Yeah? Gee, the way they pamper kids nowadays. When I was a baby, they never dusted me with no powder.
Well, what did they dust you with?
Dust. Ah, maybe I can quiet him down by rocking his crib.
Yeah.
Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop. When you hear sirens, jiggers the cop.
Jiggers? Humphrey, did the stork bring you, or was it a patrol wagon?
Look at Junior. Isn't he cute, Mr. Bogart? You know, he's an incubator baby.
Incubator? Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know I'm a sitter, but if that kid ain't hatched enough already, I'm quitting.
Please don't quit now. Please don't.
Oh, I was only fooling, Eddie. Well, if I don't give this infant all my love and care, I'd be a traitor to the oath I took, the babysitter's creed.
I don't get the babysitter's creed?
Yeah, I was sworn in today when I graduated as a babysitter. As I accepted my three-cornered sheepskin, all eyes were upon me.
Sitter Bogart. Sit down and take the oath.
I pledge allegiance to the babysitter's creed, to the principles for which I stand, and to the baby for which I sit. One baby, indivisible, with safety pins and talcum powder for all.
Furthermore, you solemnly promise that before feeding the baby,
I will wash and scrub my hands far beyond the call of duty.
And after the feeding,
I promise to place the baby over my shoulder, pat it on the back, and wait. No matter how long it takes.
When the parents go out, leaving you and the baby alone in their house,
I promise to limit my long-distance phone calls to the United States and its possessions.
At all times, a sitter must be gentle and understanding. If the baby bites you,
I will never bite him back.
If the baby will not sleep while you are busy playing phonograph records, you will not reprimand him. Instead,
I will quietly spike his pablum with Ovaltine.
Humphrey Bogart, I now pronounce you a full-fledged babysitter. You may join your fellow graduates and recite the school motto.
Onward together, never to split. Divided we fall, united we sit.
Well, Eddie, look, I think we can trust Mr. Bogart with the baby while we're at the fights. Have we got good seats?
Ringside, Harry. My regular Friday night seats. Here are the two tickets. Put them in your pocket. I always keep forgetting them. Mm-hmm. Now hurry and heat the baby's milk. Then we go.
Hold it, Harry. I want to talk to you private. Eddie, you go in the kitchen and heat the milk for the baby.
But I'm going to the fight. You're the sitter, Humphrey. If there's anything to do for the baby, what makes you think you can elect me for the job? I accept the nomination. Gosh, baby, it took me 20 minutes to fill your bottle with hot milk. It isn't easy squeezing milk through this little hole in the nipple. Harry! Baby, where's your father?
No.
Oh, he must be showing Bogart around the house. Gee, we're going to be late for the fights. Do you mind if I turn on the radio and see what's doing?
Uh-uh.
Here we are at the Hollywood Legion Stadium. In a few minutes, a main event will take place. At the ringside, there are many celebrities. And I'd like you to meet a gentleman who is sitting in one of Eddie Cantor's regular Friday night ringside seats.
Sounds familiar. I'd like to hear that laugh just once more.
This is Harry Von Zell, folks.
What a double-crosser. While I heat the milk, he sneaks out and leaves me alone with the baby and Humphrey Bogart.
Folks, I'd like you to meet a great pal who's here at the fight with me. This is Humphrey Bogart. We regret to announce that our pal Eddie Cantor won't be with us tonight because he has just became a mother.
You hear it everywhere. At quaint sidewalk cafes in New Orleans.
Yes, sir. Finest beer served anywhere.
At LaGuardia Airport in New York City.
Yes, sir. Finest beer served anywhere.
At logging camps in Oregon.
Yes, sir. Finest beer served anywhere.
At Texas Roundups.
Yes, sir. Finest beer served anywhere.
Yes, sir. You hear it everywhere. Finest beer served anywhere. Blended Splendid Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. The century-old international favorite. The beer that always tastes exactly the same. Not too heavy, not too light, but fresh, clean, sparkling. With the real beer flavor coming through just the way you like it. Wherever you go, all over America, you'll find that Pabst Blue Ribbon beer is served in distinguished homes. Homes like the F. Warren Pershings of Narragansett. The Angier Biddle Dukes of Southampton. The homes of Jonathan Wainwright, hero of Corregidor. The Bob Hopes, Gregory Pecks, Gary Coopers, and many others. Yes, you hear it everywhere. Pabst Blue Ribbon, finest beer served anywhere. The reason?
33 fine brews blended into one great beer. You hear it everywhere, finest beer.
Yes, Dinah?
Eddie, I want to ask you, what's that blue book on the piano?
Well, Dinah, I call that my social register of Blue Ribbon Songs.
Social register?
Yes, those grand old tunes that are Tin Pan Alley's 400, the very best. Take a look inside. Look at the sheet music here.
Oh, I'd love to. Oh, look, for the light of the silvery moon, Sunbonnet Sue, yes, sir, that's my baby. Oh, and here's a music copy of Way Down Yonder in New Orleans. Who's that pretty girl on the cover, Eddie?
Well, that's Blossom Seeley, who introduced the song. She's the settled-down wife of Benny Fields now. But how she wowed them at the old palace when she sang, Way down yonder in New Orleans, in that land of dreamy scenes, there's a Garden of Eden, that's what I mean. Three old babies with flashing eyes, softly whisper with tender sighs, stop. Won't you give your lady fair a little smile? Stop. You bet your life you'll linger there a little while. It's a heaven right here on earth with those beautiful queens way down yonder in New Orleans.
Eddie, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
You mean the way I sang that song?
No. No, I mean the way you're always making jokes about Al Jolson's age. Here's a picture of him on this music right here, and he's so handsome.
Well, Dinah.
And so young.
Dinah.
What?
Look at the date, 1912. Wait a minute, I think it's 1812.
Oh.
Say, you know something? Jolson looks in that picture like I look now.
Eddie?
I think.
Well, anyway, Al Jolson's still a great favorite of mine. So's his song. You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me love you. And all the time you knew it, I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. You made me glad. But there were times, dear, made me feel so bad. You made me cry, but didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you. I want your love, that's true. Yes, I do, indeed I do, you know I do. Give me what I cry for. Got the kisses that you know I die for. You know you made me love you.
Don't laugh, Dinah. Don't laugh, honey, but take a gander at this, will you?
Oh, it's a song copy of Stumbling. And look at that poor skinny little fella. Eddie, it's a picture of you.
That's right. In the flesh, but not much of it. And look, Dinah, look at that high, tight collar I wore. It almost choked me.
Yeah, now I know what made your eyes pop.
Anyway, Dinah, here's the way I sang that song in the Schubert Show, The Midnight Rounders. Stumbling all around, stumbling all around, stumbling all around. So funny. Stumbling here and there, stumbling everywhere. And I must declare, I stepped right on her toes. And when she bumped my nose, I fell, and when I rose, I felt ashamed. And told her, that's the latest step, that's the latest step, that's the latest step. My honey, notice all the pep, notice all the pep, notice all the pep. She said, stop mumbling, though you are stumbling. I like it just a little bit, just a little bit, quite a little bit. Oh, Dinah, Dinah, darling, this song you must do, just for me. It made a great star out of a girl who to this day is still one of the greatest stars, one of my favorite girls, too. I'll never forget that night, the Ziegfeld Follies of 1922, and Fanny Brice singing.
Oh, my man, I love him so, he'll never know, all my life is just despair. But I don't care when he takes me in his arms. The world is bright, all right. What's the difference if I say I'll go away when I know I'll come back on my knees someday. Oh, whatever my man is, I am his forevermore.
Oh, Dinah, we ought to do that more often, honey.
I'd love to.
Thanks, and thanks to you, Humphrey Bogart. We'll be looking forward to your starring role in your own Santa Ana production of Knock on Any Door and listening to you on the Prudential Family of Stars. We'll be back next Friday, all of us. In the meantime, remember,
I love to spend each Friday with you.
This program is brought to you by the Kraft Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Newark, New Jersey, and Peoria, Illinois. Sent your way with the best wishes of the Pabst Blue Ribbon dealers from coast to coast.
Good night, everybody.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Lisa?
Yes, Carl.
I like to spend each Saturday and Sunday with you.
Would you like to dance?
I'm not a very good dancer.
I know.
I'm not a very good singer either.
I know.
As I just demonstrated. That is the Eddie Cantor Show from October 8th, 1948. Special guest Humphrey Bogart. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Welcome back to Hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater. Mike, could you please wake Lisa up?
Already did. She's up.
Lisa, come on. It's the third hour of the WGN Radio Theater. Get in
Sorry,
here.
Sorry. It's just, there's just nothing going on in the studio. It's really hard to stay awake with nothing going on around here.
Did you hear the sound of her snoring? Man. Ah, that's your poor husband.
Yeah,
he has
poor
to put
Dan.
Up with that.
Right.
Poor Dan. Wolf.
It's really rough on him.
He has to put up with that snoring. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what, Lisa? We still have another hour of the show here.
I'll try to stay up.
And then is it so bad? Then you have the whole week off.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a few other things going on during the week.
She just sits there in her mansion
right.
and has her maids and
feed me grapes and chocolates.
Butler and valet.
Oh, I just want a chef. But now that I have
Mies
Meals, I'm okay.
Pedicure at home. She doesn't have to even go out to get a pedicure.
That would be nice.
She does it right at home.
Yeah, right.
She has them come in.
Yeah, sure. And my masseuse is on the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should hang out. I need to hang out at your place, get my nails
get your nails done.
A manicure.
Yeah, sure.
I wanted to get a manicure today.
Her dog gets that done too, right?
Oh, yeah.
My dog.
The other day I was talking on. Listen to this, Mike, and this is true. The other day I'm talking on the phone to her, and she's like, I got to go. She's like, my dog groomer's here. So she has the dog groomer come to her house.
That's true.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
This is the way to live, Mike. Right there, Lisa Wolf.
He deserves special treatment.
Yeah, because he's a special dog.
He very much is.
All right. That's your baby.
He's my baby.
Yeah, I know. I get
you. I'll post a picture of him.
All right. Yeah, why don't you?
I'm going to do it right now.
Simba.
Simba.
I even remember his name.
Yeah.
Simba.
I'm going to post a picture.
Okay. In this hour of the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to tune into, in my opinion, one of the best detective shows, probably top five detective shows of all time, The Adventures of Sam Spade, detectives created by Dashiell Hammett. Howard Duff played Samuel Spade, and his license number was 137596, Lisa. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
137596. That was his license number. And we have an episode of Sam Spade coming your way. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
All right, we're going to just play. What? We're going to just.
This is my segment. You're
no,
taking
you can't
over.
Read the information. It's this is, remember?
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so you can hear this actress's voice. In a scene from 2013's American Hustle.
And what do they win?
They're going to win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
All right, if you can identify this actress, call us at 312-981-7200. Yeah, she's what? In a scene from what?
American Hustle.
All right, take a listen.
I don't like going out. You know that I get anxiety when I have to meet people. You know how hard that is.
I love her.
You know, she's a great actress.
I want to be her.
Oh, my gosh. She has trouble dating. Did you know this?
I've heard that, but it's hard to believe.
Trouble dating. We're going to set her up with Kit.
Okay. Kit wouldn't mind dating her. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Okay, so we're back with the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I don't like going out. You know that I get anxiety when I have to meet people. You know how hard that is.
You know how hard that is.
It's hard.
It's hard.
No, it's
hard.
That's not what she said.
She said, you know how hard that is.
No, she did not.
Yes, she did.
We've got Pat on the line from Wisconsin.
She just loves to argue with me. Pat, she loves to argue with me. You know that, Pat?
What?
Lisa Wolf.
I almost said their name.
Lisa Wolf loves to argue with me, Pat. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you guys are feisty tonight.
We are feisty
tonight.
Carl has a full tummy, so he's feisty.
We're best friends, but we do like to just bicker a little.
I know you do. You like to tease.
Yeah,
we're the Bickersons.
Yeah, we are.
Pat, do you know that voice?
Yes, I do. It's Jennifer Lawrence.
You are right. She's got a great voice. And, Pat, you are a winner tonight. You've won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Do you love pizza?
It's free.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
And I really enjoy the show. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate your listening. Check it out, Pat, at loumalnatis.com and have a great pizza on us.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jennifer Lawrence did say it's how hard that is.
That's not how she said it.
Hey,
Can you play that clip again for us, Dan?
Could you?
I just closed out of it. I'm going to have to reload it.
Nah, don't worry about it.
Nah, that's okay. Carl's just being feisty.
It's okay. I'm right.
Carl's just wrong. People can listen
to this podcast and know that I'm right.
Carl's just got a bad ear.
Maybe. Lisa, you know what?
What, Carl?
I'm right.
Jennifer Lawrence does not speak like that.
I know. It was a character that she's playing. It's from, like, you know, Boston or something like that,
It wasn't quite that intense, Carl.
Okay.
I am turning my hair gray.
Yeah, you know what, Lisa? We're gonna play some classic radio now.
It's time.
Sound good?
Yes, sir.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. You know what that means, right?
We like to play radio theater.
We play radio programs, 6 of them every weekend. 6 radio shows. We're here on Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. We're in the third hour, which is always the wacky hour because Lisa's usually sleeping. She's kind of little.
Do I sound like
she kind of, you know, huh?
Do I sound sleepy?
No, you sound great.
Pat thought we were feisty.
Yeah, we are. And Sam Spade, detective. This is a great series. Dashiell Hammett, okay, he created the Maltese Falcon, right? You know about that.
Sure. Heard
Humphrey Bogart starred as Sam Spade in the Maltese Falcon movie, came out in 1941. And it was so popular that CBS decided, let's do a radio program about Sam Spade, the detective. And they asked Dashiell Hammett to write it, and he said, okay, I'll write it, but he really didn't. He just kind of ghost wrote it a little bit. Mm-hmm. He was fringely involved in it. They had great writers, and then they hired Howard Duff. He kind of was an unknown actor at the time. They were trying to cast this part for a long, long time. And then Howard Duff came in, and they heard this voice, and they were like, oh, my gosh, this guy has a great voice. And this was a super, super successful series. And the writing was top-notch. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek humor through the detective adventure. So it was the rough and tumble, but there was kind of tongue-in-cheek humor. It was pretty cool. He had a secretary named Effie Perrine, played by Lorraine Tuttle. It was sponsored by Wild Root Cream Oil, which I know you use.
Oh, it's the best for your hair.
Use that a lot. And great series. So we're going to tune this in now. Here's part one of the Stopped Watch Caper, going back to April 10th, 1949. Here's The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective.
The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too.
Spade Detective Agency.
Quoth the Raven, nevermore.
Yes?
This is me.
Is this Mr. Spade?
Yes, but is this Miss Perrine?
Well, yes, but...
Why are you eating a peanut butter sandwich at this time of night?
Why, the allusion to Poe's Raven. Was your assignment among the literati?
It certainly was. There was Rowena from Ivanhoe, a lost Lenore, a no-place Ralph, and a Boris from the Karloff of the same name.
Oh, how distinguished.
Have you got a cold, F?
No.
Well, then there was a carnivorous plant, a hideous meat-eating specimen of the botanical world, trying to take 2 fingers off me.
Well, I've got 3 fingers all poured out for you here.
Oh, Pretty hep. I can see you intend to be terribly amusing tonight. But even so, I intend to come right down and dictate my report on the stopped watch caper, or time stood still.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair.
Hello, Sam. That's a mighty sharp routine you give a Perrine on the phone.
Where's Effie? Who are you?
Sam, don't you remember me? Buffy.
Certainly not. I never saw... Buffy, wait a minute. Do I sense a certain family resemblance? No, you can't be Effie's little sister, Buffy.
Yes.
Big girl now.
But thanks anyway for the Tinker toys you sent me last Christmas.
I'd kill myself.
I intend to start having children of my own just as soon as it's practical.
Hmm. Where's Eff, Buff?
She had to go to L.A. to visit a sick friend.
A likely story.
No, really.
Chapter and verse, please.
St. Joseph's Hospital in Burbank. They went to school together, and her name is Lorene Tuttle. She's an actress.
Yes, I know her. A very fine actress. Is it serious?
I hope not for Effie's sake. They're very close.
Yeah. Well, what now? You take shorthand, Buff?
Sort of.
Spoken like a true Perrine. Come on in.
Well, I hope it's good and gruesome.
I take it back.
I meant the caper, not what you're drinking.
Okay, Buff, you win. Ready?
Why not?
Date, April 10, 1949, to Deputy Sheriff Bill Whittington, Marin County Sheriff's Office, San Rafael, California, from Samuel Spade, license number...
137596.
Oh, steady listener. Subject, the stopped watch caper. Dear Bill, here's how it turned out, and if I ever phone you for advice again, I'll take it, because you were right. She was loaded.
What about those threatening letters, Sam? Don't give another thought. Old Lady Raven has had me up there a dozen times the last 6 weeks. She got threatening letters, she got prowlers, but when I got there, she can't find the letters, and the way that house is tucked away in the woods, I don't think a prowler could find it.
How do I find it, Bill?
Huh? Well, the Gray Line bus goes right by the gate. Mount Tama Palais Road, about 3 miles this side of Rock Spring.
Well, that sounds pretty rugged. You, say she's a crank.
But she's got money, Sam.
Oh, the poor old soul.
And she got a niece.
Oh?
Yeah. Over 23, but she's stacked.
The old lady's loaded, the niece is stacked. Who else lives there?
Well, there's a butler. Somebody flattened his head when he was young, and he wears bangs to call attention to it. Sort of shuffles around the house. But you ought to see him out in the woods chasing them old ground squirrels. Quick as a deer hound. Yeah, and
Never mind. You sold me. All these marvels I have got to see. It was only 3 in the p.m. when I skulked in through the gates of Ravenswood, but it was so dark the hooty owls hadn't gone to bed yet. The fog snaked in and out through the dripping trees, long, chill ribbons of ghastly fog borne on a sobbing wind. I mushed on into the deepening gloom of the forest primeval. After 10 minutes of that, I began to wonder if there was any house there. When I saw it, I still wondered. It looked more like a fungus growth. Speak of the English?
It is chilly, isn't it, sir? Won't you come in?
Sure, why not? Yes, I expected that.
If you'll be so kind as to wait here, sir, I'll inform Miss Rowena of your arrival.
Thank you, Jimmy Stewart.
Boris, who's out there? Is it the man with the hemlock? Answer me, you brute! Where is it?
Did you say hemlock?
Oh, you must be my aunt's detective. Spade, was it?
It is, right.
I'm Ralph Raven. Come along with me, Spade. I have something interesting to show you.
Ralph Raven was the one member of the household you hadn't described to me, and no wonder. The wasted figure that looked up at me from the wheelchair was more like a ghost than a man. His face was chalk white, so white it seemed almost luminous, and the skin clung so close to his skull there seemed to be no flesh beneath it. And his wide, staring eyes looked like two cups of black coffee on a snow-white tablecloth. I followed him into a glass-enclosed room only slightly larger than the garden court at the plaza. The humidity was several points higher than the dripping woods, and the temperature was several degrees lower. But the plants he had growing there seemed to thrive on. As I edged nervously through the dense, quivering foliage, I noticed a strange-looking yellow-green pod about the size of a milk bottle at the end of a long, tubular stem. It leaned over, opened its red mouth, and said, "Hey, what is that thing?"
"Oh, that's my Sarracenia gigantosa. Meat eater. Carnivorous plant. Don't be frightened. I just fed it."
Don't tell me.
"You know what it eats?"
Acts like it needs a dose of bicarb.
"No, perfectly healthy. Merely part of the digestive process. Even as you and I."
"Not me."
"But over here, you're a detective. These plants should interest you. Oh, don't touch that mandrake."
"Never thought of it."
"It won't cry out. No vocal cords."
"Oh, I see."
"It's very sensitive, though."
"Oh, sensitive."
"And deadly poison." "Oh. And see here, these pretty purple blossoms?"
"Yes, very pretty."
"Source of an alkaloid poison favored by the Borgias. And these, white hellebore."
"Watch your language."
"I use it in compounding veratria, a poison so ancient it would probably go undetected in the police laboratories of today."
"Mm-hmm."
"And here's a charming one, both a killer and a medicine. Belladonna, or deadly nightshade, source of atropine."
"Mm-hmm."
"And this, commonly known as Nux vomica."
"Wow."
"Produces not one but two deadly poisons, the well-known strychnine and the rare and not easily detectable brucine."
"Yeah, well, it's quite a hobby, Mr. Raven."
"Yeah, it's not a mere hobby, Mr. Spade. It's a practical science. All the plants in this conservatory have their fatal properties, and all have played a role in the great crimes of history. Did my aunt get another threatening letter?"
"So she says."
"Odd that she should fear death at her age, and odd that she should hire a bodyguard. How does she know how it'll come? It might be poison."
"Speaking of poison, brother dear, it's time for your medicine."
"Oh, Spade, my sister, the lost Lenore."
"How do you do, Mr. Spade?"
"How do you do?"
"Here, Ralph, drink up."
"Why does it always have to be in milk? And look here, it's not time anyway." "Oh, this confounded watch has stopped again. Spade, what time do you have?"
"Why, it's three, That's funny, my watch has stopped too."
All right. Speaking of watches, I had to put all my watches and my clocks all ahead an hour.
Yeah, we all had to do that.
But
not
Lisa
just you.
Probably had a watchsmith come in and do it for her.
You know,
clocksmith.
I hire somebody.
Yeah.
They come to the car.
Well, there's
and the house.
So many rooms.
It's just hard to keep track of all of the clocks and watches.
27
in my house.
Rooms. You have a clock in every room, so I could.
We've
see
got the big grandfather clock
right.
in the dining room. So
you know, and then
it's an important job.
The Rolexes.
Just walking around the house having to change all the clocks.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Lisa doesn't do that.
It's a lot of work.
That's no, I can understand that.
Yeah.
This is the first portion of Sam Spade Detective, April 10th, 1949, the Stopped Watch Caper, starring Howard Duff, who was married to Ida Lupino for many years. Beautiful, talented actress. She was a producer and a director and an actress, just a talented lady. And remember him on Falcon Crest? I think it was Falcon Crest. Howard Duff was on years later, you know, from doing this series on television. I think he was on Falcon Crest. I could be wrong. I think it was, though. But, you know, there's these things in my brain. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong.
Rocks?
These things.
Oh.
These little things. But Sam Spade was a cool detective adventure, right? What? Rocks in my head?
Yes.
Yeah, they're picking on me. They're picking. Nobody feels sorry for me.
It's funny how you hear it like 30 seconds later.
if I say anything, I get 450,000 Facebook things. But if Lisa says I have rocks in my head, nobody sticks up for me.
No, I got a message. Somebody told me they thought you were right about Jennifer Lawrence's accent.
I was right.
So there you go.
So we have, you know, these radio shows that we play. Many of them are on CD collections that we have available at our website. Also digital download collections. And we have a 12-pack, right, Mike, of The Adventures of Sam Spade Detective, Howard Duff in all 12 episodes. I think we're coming out with a Volume 2 also. So,
yes.
Folks, if you want to collect these classic radio shows in a digital way where they're either downloaded or on CD, and they sound pristine. I mean, all of the shows we sell on CD and digital download are all digitally remastered by the great Mike Costella.
You will never hear anything of this caliber.
Yeah, anywhere
because
else.
I've taken it, and we've applied some processing to clean it up a little bit. So this is, you can only get these versions from us.
Right, and we always start with the master recordings, too. So we start with the best quality, and then all of the clicks and pops are taken out. So it's almost like high fidelity for a monaural recording, thanks to Mike Costella. So just go to you go to our WGN website, which is WGN Radio Theater. Click through to our main website, which has a store, and all of these shows are at the store. So just go to WGNRadioTheater.com. And also at that website, there's thousands of pictures of Lisa Wolf.
Amazing.
Thousands,
right?
And thousands. She's very modest, though. She only takes 10,000 pictures a year of herself. That's
Listen,
all.
Listen, I was getting dressed on my way over here, and my husband told me I have a face for radio, honestly.
Oh, really? That was nice.
Yeah,
that was nice of him.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
I know.
So nestled along the shores of the Fox River, in the heart of downtown Algonquin, is Riverside Plaza Apartment Complex, a haven for those who appreciate modern, classic lifestyle. The views are spectacular, the finishes are of the highest standard, and the endless amenities include the event room, fitness center, and indoor heated garage. To schedule a tour and explore Riverside Plaza, call John, 224-268-6343. That's 224-268-6343. Or visit RiversideLux.com. That's LUXE.com. Riverside Plaza, where luxury and beauty come to life.
All right. We are going to go to the news in a moment here, and then it's the conclusion to The Adventures of Sam Spade. But I do want to remind all of our listeners that we're here Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. So join Lisa and I and Mike Costella and Dan Long every single Saturday and Sunday, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Let's take a quick break, then it's the news. All right. You up still? Are you up?
Barely.
All right. Mike, we got to buy some no-dos. That'll help Lisa
out. How about
out.
Some toothpicks? You can kind of hold the lids open.
Hold that. That wouldn't be painful or anything.
No, I do it all the time.
Yeah. Hey, you know what?
What?
I want to talk real quickly about Mies Meals because they have a limited time offer for our listeners. So that means you out there in Radio Land, all of our WGN listeners, we want to buy you dinner for two delivered to your home on Mies Meals.
Yeah, and it's a limited time offer. So act now. It could
I just
be
said
taken
it,
away.
I said it was a limited time offer.
Did you? It can be taken away at
you
any
know,
moment.
Lisa doesn't listen to me, though, Mike. You know? Right.
Know.
You know.
Who does,
right?
Lisa's the boss.
I mean, I know.
She does everything, and we just listen to everything she says.
Yeah,
we just show up. We just show up. Lisa does it all. But seriously, I mean, what a great offer. Dinner for two. Free delivered to your home thanks to Mies Meals. So I want everyone listening to take advantage of this.
And you can choose your own dinner. You know, they have all sorts of offers. If you like chicken, you like fish, you're a vegetarian, whatever you want, you pick that.
And you get everything in, it's delivered, everything you need to make this fabulous meal. It's all chopped up, all the, I made salmon last week, I was telling you, and it had all the broccoli all cut up. It had this lemon sauce. It had the cheese. It had feta cheese. It had the salmon, obviously. And it was all in a like vacuum-packed thing, so it was super fresh. It was delicious. My son and I made it. He was like, Dad, this is awesome, you know? And so all you have to do is go to MeesMeals.com, and that's MeesMeals.com. Go there and check out their menu. Right?
Yeah, and enter promo code radio if you want the free dinner for two. That's radio. And you can also go to our WGN Radio Theater Facebook page. We have a link right on the top of the page. Click on the link, and it'll take you right to the Mies Meals website.
There is no catch. You can get a dinner for two delivered to your home absolutely free thanks to the WGN Radio Theater and Mies Meals. Go to Mies is spelled M-E-E-Z, Meals. .com. Enter promo code radio.
Right.
All right. Let's get back to Howard Duff as Samuel Spade, license number 137596. From April 10th, 1949, The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
I didn't know then what that meant. In fact, if you look on the last page of this report, Deputy Dear, you'll see that the stopwatch was the key to the whole puzzle. I protest that my failure to realize the significance at that moment had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that my client's niece, Lenore Raven, was, as you so roguishly put it,
stacked.
About there, Boris, the butler, bobbed up and beckoned me from the balustrade. I followed him upstairs and was ushered into the austere and regal presence of my client, Rowena Raven.
That would be all, Boris.
Yes, madam.
Oh, Boris, I just remembered.
Yes, madam.
There on the occasional table, my watch. I want you to take it around to the watchmakers in the morning. It's on the fritz again.
Yes, madam.
Mr. Spade, I must apologize for keeping you waiting.
That's all right.
My watch hasn't been keeping proper time ever since those threatening letters started. Would that be a clue, Mr. Spade?
Maybe we'd better start with the letters, Mrs. Raven.
I can't find them anywhere. I think that young man from the sheriff's office must have pinched him.
Bill Whittington? Oh, I'm sure not.
Well, all the same, it's very odd that every time he comes here, he can't find them.
Where did you put them, Mrs. Raven?
Right there on the occasional table.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Raven, sometimes people have very vivid dreams.
Huh?
Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with their minds or anything like that.
You talk just like Dr. Schlosser. That young sawbones my niece sent around looked my sciatica. Sciatica's nothing but a pain. How can you look at it? It's a lot of bull.
Yeah. What did the letters say, Mrs. Raven?
That's why I wondered about my watch, Mr. Spade. The letters always contain some reference to time. Your time is running out. Beware when time moves slowly. Soon it may stop altogether.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. You think there could be a connection? I mean, has there someone been tampering with my watch? The repairman doesn't know what's causing it to lose.
Yeah, did he think it might have been tampered with?
No! He thought it was something in the mountain. Magnetism or something.
Well, that sounds logical.
That's a lot of hooey. I lived here 40 years and my watch never lost a minute. Something in the mountain, my eye. Something in this house, more like, or somebody. You ask me, he's not half so sick as he pretends to be.
Your nephew?
Uh-huh. What do you think?
Well, I think he's a very sick man.
No wonder! Sitting in that damp conservatory day after day, pattering over those fiendish poisonous plants. You see the one that eats mice and hamburgers?
Yes, I did. What's supposed to be the matter with your nephew, Mrs. Raven?
Oh, he was in an auto accident. Injured his neck. He had to remove part of a gland or something.
His neck.
But Dr. Schlosser says he's in good condition aside from that. And if he takes his medicine faithfully, there's no reason why he should... Come in!
Ah, Mrs. Raven, how is that pain this afternoon?
Worse, thank you. Dr. Slauson, this is Mr. Spade.
Ah, yes. The detective you engaged to investigate those letters you've been receiving.
Mr. Spade thinks it's an inside job. Don't you, Mr. Spade?
Well, that depends on what you mean by an inside job.
There, you see?
Inside that romantic imagination of yours, my dear lady. Hold still now while I give you your shot.
I loathe being jabbed.
Well, now, that wasn't so bad, was it?
Can I look now?
How's Ralph getting on, Doctor?
Not well, I'm afraid. He doesn't seem to be responding to the... Mrs. Raven, what is it?
Poison! You poisoned me!
The cry she uttered was only half as terrible as the expression on her pain-contorted face. She pitched forward in her chair with both fists clenched and shaking as if in anger at the doctor standing before her. He put down the empty hypodermic on the occasional table.
Yeah. Help me carry her to the couch.
Yeah, sure.
Take away that pillow. Yeah. She must lie perfectly flat. There. That's better now. She's relaxing.
I'm dying. There was poison in that needle.
Please, Mrs. Raven, it was only sedative to make you sleep.
Sleep. The time is running out.
The poor woman. Malignant condition. Only a matter of time.
Does she know?
That she has only a short time to live? Oh, yes. Well, I have another call. Do you have the time my watch seems to have stopped?
Another one?
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. I left my watch at home.
Oh.
Ludwig, something terrible has happened.
Your aunt is sleeping.
You'd better come down to the conservatory right away. Ralph is in terrible pain.
What kind of pain?
He keeps saying he's been poisoned.
What?
Well, come along. Take that hypo to the kitchen, Lenore, and sterilize it.
Where is it?
On the table there.
He stopped in his tracks, his mouth fell open, and he gaped at the tabletop where he put down the hypodermic. In his place had appeared two items, an old-fashioned lady's watch and a note written in green ink. The note said, "Time must have a stop." I picked up the watch and held it to my ear. You guessed it. It wasn't ticking. I had a hunch my client wasn't either. And I was right.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
Ralph, where are you?
Where did you leave?
Hey, wait. Over here.
Oh, Spade. Keep them away from me.
Ralph, I came as soon as I could. Tell me your symptoms.
No. I phoned for another doctor. He's on his way now. Spade, my aunt. Take me to her. I must tell her.
Tell her of what?
I'm afraid we have some bad news for you, Ralph. Your aunt is dead.
Oh, so you poisoned her, too.
Ralph, you're sick. You don't know what you're saying. She's been to every specialist in the country. They all said the same thing.
They all said she was good for another 3 months.
My dear boy, in these cases, any doctor's guess is as bad as the next.
No. Oh,
please, Ralph, you're very sick. Please let Ludwig examine you. If it's what you think, the other doctor may be too late.
Why not? Why should I fear death?
That's better. Now let me see your eyes. So? So, open the mouth. So?
What is it? What is it?
He's right. It is poison.
You see?
You know, my dear.
Yes?
When you sterilized that needle for Ralph's shot this morning, did you pick up the wrong bottle?
Of course not.
Strange. Very strange. But don't worry, Ralph. There's a very simple antidote.
Oh, thank heaven.
You should, my dear. Indeed, you should.
And that was that, Deputy Dear. Two doctors and the county coroner took one look at my late client's medical history and decided on death due to natural causes. I didn't think so, and neither did you.
So there really were threatening letters?
I saw one.
You sure now, Sam?
Sure, I'm sure.
Where'd you say it was?
On the occasional table.
Yeah. What was it doing when it wasn't a table?
Not occasionally, occasional.
Oh, just any old table.
No, Bill. Now, Bill, get this. It's real deep. An occasional table is a table that a woman picks up at a bargain and puts into a room under the mistaken impression that it may come in handy someday. Mrs. Raven used hers as a catch-all for her unanswered correspondence, threatening letters included.
And what happened to the one you saw?
I don't know. I put it right here in my coat pocket along with a watch. It just disappeared.
Well, that might be tampering with evidence.
Listen, Bill, things were disappearing from that table almost as fast as other things showed up.
Yeah, sounds like pack rat.
You follow that up, Bill. I'm going to pack up and rat out of here.
Now look, Sam.
My client's dead. It's officially okay. I haven't made a penny out of the caper, and now I'm not likely to. So do you give me a lift back to the toll gate, or do I hitchhike?
There's your answer. Come on.
When we reached the second bedroom, whence the scream had come, we found the lost Lenore looking well-found and something comfortable. She's standing center stage, regarding herself with horror in a full-length mirror. She looks awful pale, Bill. You better go downstairs and get some ice water. She might faint.
You think so?
Yeah, hurry up. I'll stay here and keep up her circulation in case anything happens.
Yeah, you're right.
Beat it.
Oh, it's you, Sam. I thought...
You thought what?
Look. Look, I found these on my pillow.
One watch, one threatening letter. Whose watch?
Mine. I left it on the dressing table when I went in to cream my face. When I came out, somebody had slipped this under it.
On the dressing table?
No, under my pillow.
You said on your pillow.
I meant under. I mean on. I don't know what I mean. What are you trying to do to me?
Just trying to get things straight.
But the note. Look at it. It's exactly the same as the one he left in my aunt's room.
Why do you say he?
Oh, I don't know. Yes, I do. It's because I don't trust Ludwig. Dr. Schlosser.
That figures. He doesn't trust you either.
When he pretended to think I might have picked up the wrong bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was acting. Couldn't you see?
You're not doing a bad job yourself.
I'm not acting, not anymore. Listen to me. Listen, he's acted strangely ever since I foolishly said I'd marry him.
I would myself.
Oh, Sam, darling, don't joke. I don't mean like that.
How did you meet him?
He got me out of a jam once. The accident, when my brother was hurt. I went for a doctor and he happened to be the nearest one. Well, I'd been drinking, and he took over, and he sent me home before the police arrived at the scene.
Didn't Ralph know?
He blanked out. He doesn't know to this day. But
Ludwig never forgot. He forced me to recommend him to my aunt. He got into her good graces, practically moved into the house. Then he pretended to make love to me.
Pretended?
He didn't care about me till he found out about my aunt didn't have long to live. He knew half her money would come to me. Sam, do you think he poisoned my aunt?
Officially, she died from natural causes.
But you said she spoke about being poisoned. And Ralph, too.
What's that medicine you give him in milk?
I don't know. It's a prescription, just some drops that come in a metal container.
Where do you keep those drops?
Here in my room. I have to hide them. They make Ralph feel so much better. He used to overdose when the doctor trusted him to dose himself.
Let me see that medicine.
Yes, it's just here in this cabinet. Here it is.
Don't tell me. It's empty.
There was a glass bottle inside the container.
Small but heavy. Lead yet. Hey, what are you doing with that gadget? The thing with the dials and the speedometer.
Oh, that's something medical. I have to make a test on Ralph every day to see how he's getting along.
You know what that actually is?
Yes, I do. It detects anemia.
Well, I wouldn't know about that, but a Geiger counter is generally used to detect something else.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going prospecting for that missing medicine.
Ah, there you are. I've been looking everywhere for you. I'm afraid I have bad news for you, Lenore.
Ralph?
My diagnosis was correct. Pernicious anemia.
Dead.
What is that you are carrying, Mr. Spade?
Oh, nothing special, Doctor. Just an old Geiger counter.
Lenore, did you let him take it?
He said he was going to use it to find Ralph's medicine.
What happened to Ralph's medicine?
I don't know. It's just gone.
Mr. Spade, that machinery is my property. I must ask you to hand it over.
No gun necessary, Doctor. Here, take it.
Take your gun, too, sir. Lenore, carry the machine this way. Walk ahead of us. First, we try the conservatory.
He was an amateur with a gun, but I didn't jump him for it because I'm an amateur with a Geiger. I did notice that the indicator on the dial got nervous the minute we walked into the conservatory. Ralph Raven's body was still in the wheelchair, no paler in death than in life. His sightless eyes were fixed on that obscene plant. The plant looked sick, too. It was drooping, and his red mouth was hanging open. As we walked past the wheelchair, the indicator on the dial of the Geiger counter moved forward and then slipped back again. Then it took a sudden big jump.
Ah, so that was his hiding place. The maw of that disgusting carnivorous plant. Well, it's not pleasant, but there's only one way to get it. Don't move, either one of you. My eye is on you. Yes. Yes, it's here.
At first, I thought the plant had bitten him. But then he pulled his hand out, and I saw what had happened. There was a hypodermic outfit stuck in the heel of his hand. It surprised him no end, but he still managed to hold on to that gun. He swung it away from me and was holding it on Lenore.
You knew?
No. No, I didn't.
You must have. Ralph knew. He must have told you.
No, I swear he didn't.
What do you think I did this for? To die and leave you behind. To enjoy the money I got for you. No, you will come with me.
Oh, no, you don't know what you're doing. There's someone
Shut
right
up.
Here.
What are you looking at? What's behind me?
Don't bother rushing, Sam. I've got it.
Hold it, Bill.
Yeah. How's that for shooting, Sam?
Yeah. You find a bullet hole in him, Bill, and I'll call it good. That deputy deer is the crop, and it's all carnivorous. In case you're still wondering what dropped him when your shots missed, it was the poison in that hypodermic needle which Ralph had planted there for that very purpose and then baited the trap of the all-important missing medicine. Later on, I learned that what the doctor had been feeding him was the right medicine for what ailed him, an isotope of iodine. It seems it's radioactive like uranium, but if you take too much of it, you die. Not of poisoning, but of pernicious anemia, which is how the doctor planned for Ralph to die. It also magnetizes watches so they don't keep the right time. And if they're cheap ones, like mine, they may stop altogether. Period. End of report. Got all that, Buffy?
I got it, Sam. But I don't get it.
Buffy, people have studied all their lives to learn about atomic stuff like isotopes, and you expect me to teach you everything in one easy lesson.
Oh, no, Sam, I know about that. But who killed who?
Whom, dear? The doctor killed everyone, but Ralph loaded the needle.
Then they were accomplices?
No, Buff, get this. It's real shallow. Ralph knew there was no way in the world to prove that the doctor was killing him and hastening his aunt's demise, so he saw to it that she got a dose of detectable poison and did himself the same favor.
Oh.
Now, like a good girl, go type that up. Hmm?
Here it is, Sam. And I certainly hope that butler was brought to justice.
What for? His dialect?
No. For helping to deliver the threatening letters and then stealing off the occasional table.
A brilliant deduction. How did you deduce?
Sam, that's for kids. If Ralph was too ill to walk, then somebody had to push him upstairs in the wheelchair.
Well, wouldn't it have been easier just to carry him?
That's how he did it?
Or just go up himself?
That's how.
Possibly, and then again, we may never know. But do we care?
Yes. I hate loose ends, Sam.
Then keep it up.
Good night, Sam.
Spoken like a true Perrine, so I'll say to you, good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin, with score composed by Rene and Pierre Garrigan. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too. This is Dick Joy reminding you to
get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie. Keeping all the gals away.
Hiya, Baldy.
Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
How'd you like that jingle there at the end, Lisa? You were dancing.
I was jingling.
You looked like a bobblehead there.
Oh,
your head was like going.
That's what you told Roger.
Yeah,
we can't both be bobbleheads.
Yeah. How is that Wild Root Cream Oil? I know you use that on your hair.
It works really well for me.
Makes it kind of greasy?
It makes it smooth and soft.
Really?
I should do a testimonial for
some reason,
the product.
I think when I think of Wild Root Cream Oil, I think this greasy kind of...
Is my hair look greasy?
Well, I didn't want to say anything.
Oh.
My mom told me never to say anything bad about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the...
It's a look.
Yeah.
You know.
I like it.
It's a good look.
It's The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, April 10th, 1949, the Stopped Watch Caper starring Howard Duff. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, look who walked into the studio, the one and only Nick DiGilio.
Well, there's actually, my dad's name is Nick, too, so.
Oh, there's two Nick DiGilios? Okay.
It's the only Nick that we know.
Yeah. That's right.
So we'll take it.
And my dad, the other Nick, will be telling a joke.
You know, I kind of know your dad because I hear him tell a joke all the time.
Every Monday morning.
Does he look like you?
No, thank God.
No, thank God you don't look like him, or
no,
he doesn't look like you.
No,
okay.
The other way around.
Nick was saying how much he liked the Wild Root Cream Oil jingle.
The best.
Listen, Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, man. These shows are great, right?
Awesome.
These classic radio shows.
Love it. Did you get a chance to see that Orson Welles interview I told you about last
week? No, but
the Johnny Carson?
You know what? I'm glad you reminded me, because what happens is I leave here and I go into sort of like a coma till the end, because I'm up. I don't sleep. I don't sleep for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what happens is I'm on like no sleep. Because I'm doing the show, you know. Does that happen to you too? Then when
I've
you're off
lost
for the
my
weekend?
Mind a long time ago.
Yeah, it's really. I'm getting used to it now, though. But
yeah.
I will watch it because Orson Welles, you know, he's my favorite.
Yeah.
So what's on the show?
We'll get a live report from South by Southwest. Eric Childress is in Austin right now as we speak, as part of the South by Southwest Film Festival. From what I understand, he saw Key and Peele's new movie Keanu, which is about a cat. Named Keanu.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ken Peele, I think, are the two funniest men on the planet.
How about them on Fargo?
Forget it, man.
Wasn't
just
that amazing?
Everything those guys do. Yeah. I ended up watching the entire Super Bowl through them.
Yes,
because
right.
they did that live,
right.
The stream. It was
way
hilarious.
Way better than the Super Bowl.
It was 4 hours of them improvising.
Yeah.
And you can't get funnier than that. But anyway, I hope it's good. It's part of the South by Southwest Film Festival. Also premiering there is the new Pee-wee Herman movie, which actually is on Netflix Friday.
No way.
Yeah. Pee-wee. I've only been waiting 30 years for this movie.
Pee-wee is back. I remember, you know, he was off the air for a long time, and then he made a guest appearance on Everybody Loves Raymond.
It was just on the other night.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It was just on the other night because I have it on in my studio.
He ran a video store or something like that? Yep. Oh, my gosh.
Classic.